personally speaking, like my routine is, as I mentioned earlier, is I stand in front of a full body, you know, Juve device on the Vibe Plate for, you know, 7 or 8 minutes on the front side of my body, turn around, do the same thing on the back side of my body. And at the same time, I'm, you know, doing breath work and listening to a podcast. So the more, in my opinion, the more therapies you can kind of stack, you know, in that routine is you know, you'll get more bang for your buck.
Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Today's cool fact of the day actually has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today, but it's cool, so I'm sharing it with you. We are at a point where we're learning new cool things about stuff that we just took for granted. Prime example here that you probably would never think of is that we have new high-speed videos that show that the plume of carbon dioxide that comes out from a popped bottle of champagne contains something called a Mach disk, which is a kind of visible shockwave that you've probably seen in supersonic exhaust streams from jets and rockets, that sort of cool circle that happens. We just never knew that was there, but it was there the entire time. And it turns out in champagne stored at room temperature, that CO2 in the neck is 7 times as pressurized as ambient air. And so when you uncork the bottle, the gas rushes out at twice the speed of sound, and you get the same thing that a supersonic jet does. Within about a millisecond, the pressure inside the bottle's throat is closer to the surrounding air, and that shockwave goes away. And of course, this research did have to come from France because, hey, that's where champagne is from. But what does that mean for everything else we're doing? Do you have any idea what the bubbles of CO2 gas inside your cells do? You probably don't, because actually, we haven't figured much of that out yet. So when you deal with some arrogant person who says, that can't work because it doesn't, we're at a point in the evolution of humans where we're learning more about the stuff around us all the time than we ever even imagined 20 or 100 years ago.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's interview is going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to talk about something that I do discuss in detail in my new book, Superhuman. In fact, we have this amazing subtitle called The Bulletproof Plan to Age Backward and Maybe Even Live Forever. The new book is out in the world. And for 20 years, I've been working on this anti-aging thing, talking about how I think we're going to live a lot longer than you think we're going to live right now. And this book says, here's what you can do that doesn't cost anything. Here's what you can do that's pretty cheap. And here's what you can do that's pretty darn expensive now, but will be cheap coming up. So check out DaveAsprey.com. And you can get Superhuman there or anywhere books are sold online. And if you have Superhuman and you like the show, I would really appreciate it if you took about 2 seconds to leave a review on Amazon, because it really matters for me as an author. Tell me how I'm doing. If you like the book, if it's useful, that's cool. And if it's not useful, you should leave a review as well. But seriously, this book is awesome. Now, what did I write about in the book that has to do with champagne? Oh, nothing. That's right. It turns out I did write a substantial amount around aging and light and what it does for you. And not just circadian rhythm, but how you can actually use light therapeutically. So this is an in-person podcast recorded at the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills with my friend Scott Nelson, who is the founder of Juve, which is one of the world's trusted manufacturers of red light therapy devices. If you're a longtime listener to the show, you remember when I interviewed Scott and Justin on episode 516. And there we talked about kind of how Juve got started, but there's some amazing new research that you are totally going to love that Juve has pioneered around what light does for different systems in the body that we just didn't know about. So speaking of all sorts of cool new things, welcome to the show, Scott.
Dave, thanks for having me back. It's been maybe just a little bit over a year, so excited for another conversation around light.
It's amazing. We use Juve at Upgrade Labs, which is here at the Beverly Hilton, and I've seen how you guys are evolving the company, but what I really wanted to do was just dig in on the cool new things that aren't in the world out there. I think I did a reasonable job of saying, look, this light therapy stuff matters for biohacking. I've talked about on our last show how I used this intense infrared light on my brain almost 20 years ago after the first study came out. And now it's becoming a real deal. And you guys are actually looking at placebo-controlled, double-blind trial sort of things now. Tell me about bones and light. And this isn't a vitamin D conversation.
Yeah, so there's really some compelling research in certain categories, bone health being one of maybe three or four that we'll talk about, you know, throughout the course of this discussion, which I think most people are gonna find really interesting. But with respect to bone, there's probably been bone health in general. There's probably been, three to four really solid research papers that have been published over the past 2 to 3 years. That showcase some really unique things when it comes to helping people recover from bone-related fractures, injuries, et cetera. And I think there's probably a couple things that really stand out when you look at that research. One is a study that comes to mind, which examined, I believe, about 40 or 50 participants that had suffered from some type of facial fracture, facial injury. And it was a placebo-controlled study, so meaning, you know, half the participants received a sham treatment, so a fake treatment, in essence, if you're not familiar with how studies are structured.
If I had a broken face and someone gave me a fake treatment, I would break their face.
You might. Unless you really believe that sham treatment was gonna work, right? But I think that's just important to call out, that this was a really well-structured study, and the researchers actually used 3D imaging, so it wasn't just kind of, you know, qualitative type of feedback or conclusions that were based on qualitative feedback. It was the real deal. And after just a week of receiving near infrared light therapy, the participants that received the non-sham treatment, so the real treatment, showed significantly less swelling in their face. And I think that calls out kind of the first thing with respect to bone health, is that it's pretty clear that the research is showing these wavelengths of light, red and near-infrared light therapy, enhance immune function to reduce things like swelling, inflammation, et cetera. So that's certainly an aspect when it comes to, you know, recovering from bone-related injuries.
But if they're using 3D imaging, they're not looking at bones. That's more cosmetic, right?
I mean, there's a certain amount of, you know, cosmetic or aesthetic aspect to it. But I think that the cool thing about it is they were using pretty high-end imaging to quantify the results when it comes to using near infrared light therapy.
How much faster were they healing with light versus the sham treatments?
After just 1 week,
Okay. Yeah. But were they 50% better, 100% better? You know, do you have like a good sense? In other words, if my recovery was going to be 8 weeks,
yep.
If I use light, is it likely to be 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
Those results are, I don't think the researchers like parsed those out. But they were definitely statistically significantly reduced versus the sham treatment.
I've definitely noticed that anytime you have an injury, whether it's, you know, a bruise or just a scratch or something, mm-hmm. the light therapy really does seem to make it heal ridiculously fast.
Right.
So, all right. And on bone health specifically, usually people say, oh, I need sunlight so I can get vitamin D, which is going to help me have strong bones. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll take some vitamin K2 along with that, et cetera, et cetera. But how is it that red, and in this case, I think it was, was this red light or near infrared light or both in the study?
It was near infrared.
It was near infrared. Mm-hmm. So what is near infrared actually doing in the cells in the body? Do we understand?
And I think we're beginning to learn a lot more about the mechanisms of action, some of which are fairly well understood, but and I think we'll probably get into this a little bit more when you talk about some of the other sort of emerging benefit areas when it comes to light therapy. But with near-infrared light, some of these bone-related studies are showing that this type of light can penetrate actually much deeper than initially expected to stimulate, you know, those osteoblasts or osteocytes, which are the cells that are in, you know, the matrix of our bones, helping to reform it, to heal those bones, et cetera. So I think that's really a cool aspect of light therapy that these, not only are we seeing near infrared light specifically being able to penetrate much deeper than previously thought, but like the systemic benefits of exposure to this type of light on a consistent basis is showcasing some pretty interesting results, which is pretty cool. You wouldn't necessarily, you know, intuitively think that this type of therapy could help reform bone, but the data is pretty clear that it does.
There's tons of studies out there that talk about collagen formation, and Bulletproof is the company that made collagen cool. It was not something that I think most of us used, at least other than injecting in our lips, maybe, but as a food and performance supplement. So I've been reading about collagen for almost 20 years, and we know that red light stimulates collagen production. But what a lot of people don't know is that the matrix of bone itself is made out of collagen.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that when people are using these high intensity red and infrared lights, like the ones you're using in Juve, are they potentially affecting collagen in the bone as the mechanism of action, or is it just something else, or do we just not know?
No, I think it absolutely is. There's no doubt. In fact, those fibroblasts are being stimulated and are able to produce more ATP energy, which allows for, you know, the increased production of collagen. So, and a lot of people think of collagen for skin health, right? Which is great for reducing fine lines, wrinkles, sort of the aesthetic benefits that come from, you know, collagen in your skin. But a lot of people forget that, like, as you mentioned, Dave, collagen is everywhere in our bodies,
yeah.
Right? Tendons, ligaments, bone, et cetera. And by stimulating those cells that produce collagen, by way of, you know, red and near infrared light, you can reap a wide range of benefits from that.
The whole fascia in the body is made out of collagen. And some of the more advanced healers that I've worked with, both physicians and otherwise, are starting to look at fascia as a way of carrying information. It's essentially an information carrier, and it even carries electrons differently in the body. So it's this distributed system. And if you have poorly formed fascia, you're not growing it correctly, or you're not nourishing it correctly, it probably has systemic effects beyond what we think today. That's why things like Rolfing and all, like, why does this deep tissue manipulation seem to do stuff for people? There's probably a reason that we've been doing that sort of stuff for 1,000 years or something in different traditions. So I'm going to stick with stimulating collagen using red and near infrared light and eating collagen and getting a massage. I think that's probably
a good recipe for success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In these studies and in your experience, you know, your background is from Medtronic, and you know, you've gone deep on the research. How much time do people need to spend with light therapy to get benefits?
It really depends on what you're trying to treat. You know, I think most listeners that are that tune into your show on a regular basis are, you know, are biohackers or you know, enthusiasts around kind of overall health optimization. In that scenario, it's really kind of hard to overdo, you know, light therapy. And so it kind of depends on what you're using it for. But like with a full body system like our devices, with kind of the power that's delivered from those, generally speaking, we recommend about 8 to 10 minutes, you know, at a, you know, roughly 6 inches away from the device. But to that point, that's one of the things that we're learning a little bit more about with specific treatments like cognitive function, as an example. That, yeah, if you're using red and near infrared light for just enhanced overall cognitive function when it comes to like memory retention or faster reaction times, dosing may not be as important. But when it comes to healing from, you know, maybe chronic injuries like a TBI or chronic diseases like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, et cetera, dosing does matter. And I think that's one of the interesting things. In fact, Dr. Praveen Irani, who's the current president of WALT, which is one of the more well-known kind of societies within kind of the world of photomedicine, just sent me a paper recently that suggested this very thing, that when it comes to patients that suffered from dementia and using near infrared light to try to help with some of those symptoms, dosing was very apparent. Proper dosing was very apparent in some of the results that they saw.
This is light on the head specifically.
You got it. Yep.
I will just double down on that. And this is why I know light therapy is powerful. That about 20 years ago when I had that crazy internet device that used an 880 nanometer light on the brain, I put it just for 2 minutes over the language processing center of the brain above the left ear. And I spoke in garbled words for a couple hours. It actually scared the crap out of me. And that's maybe I overdosed, right? So how do you, when someone's using Juve, how do you know that they're not overdosing?
When it comes to like specific health conditions like that, we generally point people in the direction of their healthcare provider. And then when it comes to using light therapy, ideally they're having discussions with someone that's in the world of photomedicine that can speak to it, you know, at a much deeper level, understanding kind of the full ramification of their health background.
And to be really clear, I was using a super high powered thing that was touching my skull in one little spot. And the same thing doesn't happen if you're following the 6 inches away or shining lights on your face. It doesn't happen at all like that. So I would be less concerned about it. I've, from talking with people using lasers and all that, they've said if you overdo it, that you basically get benefits from more and more and more, and then it plateaus. And then if you just, say, strapped a Juve to yourself and wore it all day long every day, that your cells would probably start to not get any benefits from it.
I think that's the better way to think about like dosing when it comes to kind of general health optimization, is that one, it is hard to overdo, but eventually you will reach some sort of law of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And I think that really speaks to the concept or the mechanism of action when it comes to red and near infrared light therapy, is that these wavelengths of light are stimulating your mitochondria in your cells. And that stimulus is great, but a chronic stimulus probably isn't, just like anything else.
It's like running a marathon every day.
You got it.
Might
you got
not
it.
Be good for you.
Your cells need a break at some point.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of high level, but that's sort of the reality, you know, of the situation.
It's the same as true for ketosis.
Mm-hmm.
I've like read the Bulletproof Diet. Like, it's good for you. Go out of it. Go in, go out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the cyclical nature of things. And so I don't think it's necessary to, you know, walk around with, you know, red lights shining on your skin all the time. But having that intense stimulation followed by healing, it's like lifting weights. You don't want to do that all the time either.
Yeah, so, you got it.
Okay. Now, we know from this new study that you talked about that healing of bones is faster. What about bone density in otherwise healthy people? Do people see increases in bone density if they didn't have a broken bone, if they're regularly using red and near infrared?
I can't point to any studies off the top of my head, but there's a high likelihood that you'll find published data that speaks to bone density. In fact, kind of interesting anecdotal story is that we're seeing, you know, OsteoStrong clinics, which I know you had one of the co-founders on your podcast not too long ago. And a lot of those clinics, which are, they have a unique kind of, you know, protocol and modalities around, you know, preventing osteoporosis.
Basically flexing the bones.
Yeah.
We've got a machine at Upgrade Labs does a similar thing.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a machine designed by the same guy.
Okay.
And it's so they're seeing it from stimulating bone morphogenic protein or BMP. I haven't seen a study that says red lights do that, but I'm intrigued because anything that increases production of osteoblasts in the bone cells or osteocytes, which are basically the cells that get embedded in the bone matrix, is probably going to improve bone density. But I wouldn't go out there and say, oh, you're a postmenopausal woman and you're developing osteoporosis, all you need is light therapy. But given that you probably care about your skin anyway, is light therapy likely to be helpful? Probably, but you might want to take your vitamin D, vitamin K2, and get some sunshine.
You
agree with that?
No, 100%. Okay. Like we're never going to be. You'll never find us as a company like promoting the concept that all you need is light. As an example,
You're not a breatharian.
No, far from it. But. But what we will say is that light is underappreciated as an aspect of health, right? And most people think of food, right, and supplements, yeah, and some type of, you know, training, you know, regimen of some type. But the overwhelming majority of people don't think of light as part of that kind of overall health equation. And so it is
junk light matters.
Yep.
And high nutrient light matters.
You got it. It all matters, from, you know, preserving sort of your natural circadian biology to, you know, therapeutic, using it for therapeutic reasons to heal or to optimize, you know, hormone balances, et cetera.
Well, let's talk about hormones, because you, one of the reasons I wanted to interview you today, you've got some new info about hormones in men and women using red and near infrared light. And were they using actually the Juve devices in these studies?
They were. We actually just wrapped up the second wave of participants in one of several studies that are ongoing right now, centered around the use of full body light therapy for overall hormone health. And you'll see us continue to fund and sponsor more and more of these studies, because our core thesis is that for overall health optimization, full body light therapy is ideal. But specific to this study, it's really interesting, because we wanted to try to answer that question: is full body light therapy good for hormone health in both men and women? Because we have all these anecdotal reports, more so from men, that have done, you know, blood work pre and post some type of light therapy regimen, and noticed some pretty dramatic results when it comes to testosterone production. But it's all kind of like, you know, relatively small number of participants, small case series, if you will. So we wanted to showcase that in an actual study, and also involve women too, because it's a common question with women, is like, if men can increase their testosterone in a healthy way, can women increase their progesterone and keep their progesterone to estrogen ratios healthy? And although the results are still early, by the time this episode airs, we'll have a really nice FAQ piece up on our site from Dr. Kelly Gibbous, who was the principal investigator in this particular study. She's the founder of Bristlecone Health in Minneapolis. And at a high level, the results were really staggering, especially when it comes to female hormone production. What we saw was really two things that stood out when it comes to females with the use of daily full body red and near infrared light therapy with our devices, is that not only did they see really healthy progesterone increases, but they also saw balanced progesterone to estrogen ratios, which is really important, because you don't want estrogen dominance, which is really common as females age.
Oh yeah, it's a major issue. And in fact, we had a whole podcast about progesterone. Mm-hmm. It was a guy who came on and was saying pretty much progesterone cream fixes almost anything, you know, because of adrenaline dominance when people are more stressed. And your finding in these studies with women, was there any particular age range, or?
They were both premenopausal, perimenopausal, and postmenopausal. So okay. Across the board.
And how long each day or each week, how much exposure to Juve were they getting?
They were using our recommended treatment guidelines, which is they were using what we call the Juve Solo, which is kind of our entry-level device into full-body light therapy. And they were just using that for 10 minutes on a daily basis on their front and their backside.
So 10 minutes, so 5 minutes front, 5 minutes back?
10 minutes front, 10 minutes.
Okay, so 20 minutes of total exposure per day.
Yep.
All right. And you found that in women, that it changed the ratio of estrogen and progesterone. So was it decreasing estrogen or increasing progesterone?
It was increasing both, but the what's interesting is the ratios stayed balanced. So
okay.
Even though, like, the ideal goal would be, to your point, Dave, as you just mentioned,
would be to increase progesterone, right? Healthy levels of progesterone. But you're normally going to see a rise in estrogen as well. But the rise in estrogen was a healthy ratio in relation to the progesterone increases.
So estrogen went up a little bit. Progesterone went up much more.
You got it.
Okay. Interesting. Just from light exposure. That's new data. That's something that I have not heard of or seen before. And that was a study that you funded. That's cool.
Yeah. And what we want to do more of that. And what's interesting is that when you kind of think about the mechanisms at play, right? And that'd be cool to kind of resurface that interview that you did with that went deep on progesterone. But, you know, progesterone is kind of like the testosterone for guys. Like most guys think of, I want more, you know, T. When women, and progesterone is kind of the same thing. And what happens as women age is that the HPA axis can be, you know, chronically stimulated, which leads to, you know, stress all the time. Your body's sort of, it's a signal to your body that you should always be in flight mode. And so that prevents DHEA production, leads to estrogen dominance, et cetera. Like there's whole downstream ramifications that happen. And by, using or exposing your body to consistent red and near infrared light therapy on a daily basis, it's like at least the early results showcase that not only do you have healthy DHEA increases, which, you know, convert to progesterone increases, but also that HPA axis is also regulated in a healthy way as well. So really interesting stuff. And okay. I think just hormone related studies, I think are very interesting to us. And we're excited to kind of do more of those.
Okay. What is the benefit to raising DHEA with light versus just taking some DHEA in a capsule?
It's a great question. I'd love to be able to point to like a study, and maybe we'll do something like that at some point down the road. But I think anytime that you can stimulate your body to naturally produce more of something, that's probably, generally speaking, a better than supplementing alone, if at all possible.
It seems to me that there's all these feedback loops inside the body, most of which we don't even understand. So if you take something externally, then the body may downregulate its own production. But if it upregulates its production so you get more, it probably won't downregulate it. But I would say we don't have a study for that yet.
Yeah.
Just if you look at how life works and you were to make a bet which of these is going to be a better choice, probably getting your body to just do it naturally. It's kind of the same with vitamin D. And my opinion on that over the past 25 years has shifted, where it used to be 20 years ago, everyone's deficient, and pretty much everyone is deficient, but we didn't understand that if you can get vitamin D from a supplement and then go into the sunshine, that the sunshine is activating the vitamin D. So there may even be a case. In fact, I would bet it's the case where if a woman is low in progesterone and is estrogen dominant, she might want to take progesterone and use light therapy, and then suddenly see really profound shifts that wouldn't happen if you used either one alone. But no one's tested it yet. But that's what I would do if I was hacking, you know, my own perimenopause, which fortunately I don't think I'll have to deal with.
I think you touched on some really interesting points that, you know, at the end of the day, everyone wants to point to some, you know, really well-structured study. But that example that you brought up with respect to vitamin D, I think, is a perfect one, right? And that I think the overarching sort of narrative to me is that it's probably just it's healthy maybe to start with both, but the important point is the need for like ongoing results, right? Just like you know everyone listening to this that drives a car is going to understand the concept that they need an oil change, right? Once, twice, three, four times a year, maybe depending on what you drive. You sort of need to do the same thing when it comes to your body, right? You need those, you know, annual, you know, semi-annual, you know, checks in the form of, you know, saliva or blood-based testing.
I thought you were going to say in the form of massive stem cell injections.
I won't go there though. That might be a thing you want to look at as well.
I did. Now, let's talk about guys though. Years ago, I said, "Hey, here's a study that shows if you get sunlight or red light on your technical term balls." it raises testosterone. So there's a whole generation of people in jail now for public indecency, for trying to get sun where the sun doesn't shine. You also have found testosterone shifts in men from using, this was another Jew study when they funded using your gear.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
And what did you find in men, and where did they have to put the light?
Yeah. So in this scenario, it was the same study, and we enrolled just both men and women.
And the men followed the same exact protocol that I mentioned earlier. 10 minutes on the front side of their body, 10 minutes on the backside using our Juve Solo device. And so not necessarily shining the light directly on their nether regions, but just this systemic full kind of, you know, nearly full body exposure to these wavelengths of light. And again, the early results showcase that that men experienced a statistically significant increase in total, both free and total testosterone.
Were these deficient men or men who had normal testosterone levels?
So the men were they weren't necessarily deficient per se. When you look at
the standard ranges for deficient men, right.
But I think what's interesting is that. The two diets that were followed in this particular study were kind of a standard American diet. So basically, you know,
garbage,
exactly. And a ketogenic diet. And the results, both groups saw significant increases in their testosterone. But the group that followed a ketogenic diet saw even greater increases.
That's shocking, given that testosterone is made out of cholesterol. And if you eat enough fat, you can make hormones. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought? and if you're stimulating your cells to grow using red light, and cell membranes are made out of fat, 45% of which is saturated fat. It's shocking that people who eat fat and can metabolize it had better results. I can't imagine. That's pretty cool that you mix that in.
It's sort of funny when you take a step back and think about it. It all makes sense, right? It's very intuitive, but it's cool to actually showcase that in an actual, you know, study.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
Can you talk about percentage of improvement in testosterone? Are we talking, you know, 20%, 10%?
Yeah, I mean, so the results that we saw both in men and women. So with women, again, we studied progesterone to estrogen, yeah. And men, it was total versus free testosterone. We're talking anywhere from percentage increases of, you know, 20% all the way up to 60 and 70% increases. So
that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, and I want to. The major caveat is here is that our devices aren't you know, cleared for any sort of, like, you know, hormone replacement type of therapy. These are early results, but they're so staggering. The results are so compelling. It's, you know, it, we're excited just to do more of this.
Here's the deal: the risk of shining red light on your body is pretty damn low, right? And it's not very expensive to get a testosterone test. So these are the sorts of things that are perfect for biohacking, because you're saying, well, wait a minute, could I see if this effect works for me? And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, then you tried something. Like, it's okay. It's not like you're saying, you know, the studies show that if you just open yourself up with a pocket knife from abdomen to forehead, like, okay, the risk reward isn't going to be there. So this is the kind of thing where, you know, definitely it's not cleared for this, but if a physician's listening to this and has a patient who's interested in stuff, and you know what, hey, let's order a lab test and see if it works. Mm-hmm. And you could do the same thing with a ketogenic diet. You could do the same thing with meditation. You could do the same thing with not ejaculating a lot. All of those will probably move your testosterone levels, and they might move them differently for you versus me, right? So I love the idea that we can self-experiment with affordable gear and just see what happens.
And that's one of the cool things about light therapy is exactly that. It's not only is it supported by a lot of published science, but it is nowadays it's really accessible, right? And pretty affordable for the most part. And like a shameless plug for our own devices, but they even come with a 60-day trial. So, I mean, theoretically you could do
a testosterone experiment and send it back if it doesn't go.
You got it. You got it. So, I mean, it's really lightweight stuff that that can have some pretty profound benefits.
I'm definitely intrigued at that one, for sure, especially because you don't have to put it in your pants. Another question, though, these were on the abdominal cavity?
Correct, yeah. So like that device I mentioned that was involved in this particular study, if you're the way that we instructed the participants to use it was, you know, hang it from a door, as it's kind of intended to do, and it treats from about the top of your head to maybe, you know, mid-thigh on most people.
Oh, okay. So it was a bigger one.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking I would want to actually get red light on my face while I'm raising my testosterone, because then I'd have less wrinkles and more testosterone. And then it's like, hey, I'm looking good. I'm married. It doesn't really matter.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is, like, we have a fair number of, like, customers that purchase our devices for, like, a specific thing, like testosterone or hormone health or maybe reducing pain and inflammation. But they report back on all of these like ancillary benefits. Like all these people are commenting that they think I'm doing Botox injections, or like I just feel better, or my mental alertness is that much faster. And so it's just really cool the when you take a you take a pause and kind of look at light therapy from a holistic standpoint. It's beneficial in so many different categories, which I kind of speaks to the underlying concept that we mentioned earlier. It's like it's an important aspect of health, you know, just being aware of light and making sure it's not disrupting something in your kind of your lifestyle, but also using it therapeutically too, can lead to a lot of wide ranging benefits.
I'm still wondering if there's going to be like Juve underwear.
That's to be determined. You know, I think maybe some of those ideas have some.
I'm just trying to get you to like feel awkward. I think I pulled that off. Now there's so much interesting stuff going on around nitric oxide as well, where red light in some studies I've read stimulates nitric oxide. And for people listening, if you're like, why do I care about that? Nitric oxide increases blood flow throughout the body. In fact, some of the medications and things that increase erectile function manipulate the nitric oxide system. So getting red light could potentially, in fact, I'm very certain of it, if it increases nitric oxide, that you're going to see it when you wake up in the morning if you're a guy. It's called a kickstand.
But that very point, right, that increased, circulation, that I think that speaks to the benefit of full body exposure, right?
Yeah, getting that like systemic wound healing. Yeah. Oh my God, I got more blood into my wound so it could get nutrients in. Who would have thought that I healed faster? It's not that hard. Like the body actually makes sense. You just have to not believe false information and then it makes sense.
Yeah, so. No doubt.
Okay. Talk about the gut microbiome and light, because we know, and I've been one of those people saying, you can see that mitochondria make photons and read photons, and we know your gut bacteria makes a lot more light. In it, people are saying, what, it makes light? You've seen photoluminescent stuff in the ocean probably. There's a version of that going on in your gut, but not quite as bright. So we know light's doing something in there. Otherwise, Mother Nature wouldn't waste energy making light if it didn't do something.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen using your technology and effects on the gut bacteria?
This is a really compelling area that I think you'll find us like looking to study more and more, is knowing that healthy gut microbiome is foundational for overall health. But the research here is like it's very early. But I think what really stands out is I think probably within the past 6 months there was a paper published by a group of researchers in Australia that studied broad applications of light therapy. So not targeted treatments, but broad applications of light therapy. And they showed that across the board, consistent exposure to red light actually led to a more healthy gut microbiome in these participants. And what really stood out to me looking at the conclusion that these researchers had is that they proposed kind of a different mechanism altogether, because red light really can't penetrate into the gut. It really shouldn't. Near infrared light maybe, but red light shouldn't. So you wouldn't intuitively think that red light could actually lead to those types of benefits. But I think this speaks to kind of full body systemic exposure to these healthy wavelengths of light, seeing increased nitric oxide, increased circulation, can lead to some really interesting health benefits as deep as the gut.
That sounded like we don't really know, but it's probably doing something.
that would be the 10-second answer.
Is, all right.
Yeah. Very early, but the results seem pretty positive.
And there are people who listen to the show who work in university labs, actually quite a lot of them. And I think everyone who's worked with bacterial cultures or fungal cultures knows that the light environment they're in sort of matters. One of my companies, Homebiotic, we make a spray that eats toxic mold and mildew and things like that. So you spray these soil bacteria around so the mold can't grow in your house. And light matters. So if you spray it under the sink where it's dark, it lasts a lot longer. And if you spray it on a windowsill, it doesn't last as long because light breaks down bacteria. And if you're doing it in a petri dish, you put it in the dark. One thing happens, you put it in the light, another thing happens. So we know that there's some interactions here, but I wouldn't feel comfortable right now saying, oh, if you have, you know, X amount of red light on the gut, it's going to increase the number of species the way a prebiotic might. But does it have an effect that we haven't studied yet? I think it probably does. All right, let's talk about something that no one wants to talk about. The big C word, cauliflower. Oh, no, I mean cancer. So the reason no one wants to talk about cancer is that there's a lot of money being made in cancer right now. And you know, some of these treatments are $100,000+. So anytime someone says something about cancer, even if there's really clear data, for instance, eating burned meat causes cancer, there's no one selling a burned meat reduction drug. So we have issues around that. So I understand you might not be able to say some things you might want to say about cancer, but what do the studies show about exposure to red and near-infrared light in cancer?
And we're kind of joking, right? But I mean, to most people, you know, cancer can be a pretty serious topic.
Oh, yeah.
Especially from our perspective, it's kind of one of those hot-button, touchy subjects that it's at surface level, it's sensitive, right? But at the end of the day, like, most people want, like, a healthy, natural way to, like, fight cancer, right, across the board.
Well, I mean, in Superhuman, my new book, by the way, did you notice my shameless plug? If you haven't ordered this book, it's probably because you're a bad person. Anyway, in Superhuman, I write about these things called the four killers. And if you and I just sit down, if we were average people, which means we weren't exposed to red light and lots of other things because we're both biohackers, but if we're average people, what's going to kill us? Cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, or Alzheimer's. That's the vast majority of them. And if you take opiate stuff out, because a lot of people are dying from fentanyl and things like that. So we're gonna ditch that and car accidents and things. But okay, cancer is a big deal. And what a lot of people don't know, your odds of dying from cancer are still substantial. But if you get cancer, the odds of not dying are 50% better than they used to be. In other words, we're actually making progress. Of course, it's incredibly painful progress with lots of chemicals and radiation, and you might not like it. But you can probably survive cancer more than you could. But I think the right anti-aging strategy would be do everything you can to reduce the likelihood of getting cancer and to increase immune function so your natural killer cells will kill cancer before it really gets started. So what do we know about red light therapy and natural killer cells and about basically reducing risk of cancer versus treating cancer?
Yeah, and I think you hit on like the two aspects of cancer when it comes to using light therapy to both prevent it and really treat the sort of the downstream ramifications that come with, you know, treatments like chemo and radiation. And kind of starting with the latter, the data is like overwhelmingly clear that if especially with, you know, head and neck cancer patients, that there's a lot of negative consequences that come with chemo and radiation, oral mucositis being one of the big ones, lymphedema, etc. And across the board, red and near-infrared light is very healing to treat some of those like negative consequences that come with, you know, those traditional treatments. But I think the data is like, it's so clear that like in fact, two oncology societies, medical societies recently changed their guidelines and are now advising all oncologists, they're like, it's within their core guidelines that light therapy should use for both treatment and prevention of cancer with head and neck cancer patients.
So this is skin cancer or even inside like glioblastoma stuff inside the brain?
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Yeah, the latter. And to see, and the reason that stands out is to see a society change their guidelines and now advise for not just the treatment, but also the prevention that's a really big deal, like in a traditional healthcare setting. So I think that's really cool. And that actually is a nice transition to talk about, you know, prevention of cancer. And I mentioned one of the leading researchers in the field, Dr. Praveen Araney. He's the president of WALT. Some of his recent work is actually looking at the mechanism of like, how is this actually happening? And historically, there's been kind of this fear that red and near-infrared light, because of the stimulating nature of these wavelengths, may induce tumor growth. And actually what he's finding, and it's not just him, more and more researchers are finding this, that because of the ability of these wavelengths to stimulate transforming growth factor beta, that actually you get the opposite response with tumor cells. So you actually get apoptosis and autophagy with tumor cells.
So it's really cool. It kind of speaks to kind of like you get the best of both worlds when it comes to red and near infrared light. Your healthy cells respond very favorably, right, by producing more ATP energy, by functioning normal. And then those cells that aren't functioning normal, those dysfunctional ones, those cancer cells, mm-hmm. die. Right. So it's really cool when you think of, some of this emerging, you know, research, especially when it comes to like the mechanism of action, because when it comes to a touchy issue or subject like cancer, man, light therapy is we're learning a lot of really profound things when it comes to that.
Going back like 5-6 years before he was as well known as he is today, Dominic D'Agostino came on the show, and I've, because of the anti-aging nonprofit stuff, I've had a chance to talk with other people. And if I was dealing with one of these head and neck cancers or any other cancer, I would pretty much be, wow, I'm going on a ketogenic diet with low inflammatory toxins and the right proteins. Let's see if I can think of a diet like, oh yeah, the Bulletproof diet. I would do that, and I would go into a hyperbaric chamber, and I would bring a red light device with me. Right. And so now all of a sudden you're getting this flood of oxygen. Oh, and I do some fasting as well. That's pretty important. And if you were to do that every now and then when you didn't have cancer, is it going to lower your risk of getting cancer? Probably. But most of us don't have hyperbaric oxygen at home. Okay, you can skip that, right? So then fast sometimes and do ketosis sometimes, but not all the time because you won't like that either, right? And use some red light therapy. And are you measurably reducing your risk? You'll never know because you can't A/B test yourself. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's the version of me where I did the opposite path, and oh, that version of me died. So since we don't have this, you know, multiverse time travel thing to compare notes, you just have to say, does it make sense that I'm reducing my risk? And if so, do I think it's meaningful? And do I get other benefits? Because you could spend all day, every day, reducing risk. One thing I like about red light therapy is you can do it while you're doing other things. Right. So if it's shining on the back of you, you can watch Netflix if that's what you want to do. You can listen to an audiobook. You can be on the phone with somebody. So it's not like it's that big of a deal unless you're doing a video conference. And I have done those with red light therapy too, and people think I'm weird, but whatever.
I was gonna say turn off the video.
Right? I just leave it on. It's more fun. You're like, sorry guys, just don't look at the video. It's too bright.
No, but speaking of stacking therapies, you hit it on the nose. In fact, that's one of my, you know, go to protocols every morning is I've got our big Juve Elite full body system, and I do about 6 to 7 minutes on the front and the back. But I'm standing on the Bulletproof vibration plate.
Nice.
Yeah, at the same time. So you know, I get some stimulation from, you know, with my lymphatic system, but also, you know, I'm proactively, you know, helping my cells function better. And I think it's interesting when you look at like kind of really. Especially like in a lot of our conversations with these photomedicine researchers who are brilliant people, like this can be really a complex, you know, topic to try to understand and like really peel back, like what's really going on, why you get, you know, stimulation here, and you know what's happening with, you know, hormone production, etc. But when you like really start, you know, asking the why, well, why does that happen? At the end of the day, most of it kind of circles back to like the mitochondria in a healthy cell is functioning in the right way, right? So much it goes back to just healthy mitochondrial function. And by following, you know, ketogenic diets, the Bulletproof diet, et cetera, you're reducing that stress and allowing your cells or giving them more opportunity to function, you know, in the right capacity.
Do what they're supposed to do when they get all the stuff they need.
Right.
It's funny. We talked about red light therapy and the microbiome. A new study came out just in the last few months around whole body vibration. And it's funny because like, I've been doing this for a long time. Bulletproof, I think, has had the Bulletproof vibe for 8 years. And a study came out a couple of years ago saying, it's from I'm forgetting which one, like British Medical Journal or some sort of a big journal saying, wow, this stuff really is effective like exercise. But very recently, one came out that said that whole body vibration had a beneficial effect on the gut microbiome.
Hmm.
So there you are using red light, and we believe based on what our earlier conversation, it's probably doing something beneficial to gut bacteria, and you're vibrating. So all of a sudden, who would have thought maybe the mechanism of action there is that it changed your gut bacteria in a positive way that then affected your biology? It's kind of cool. We don't know, but there's something going on there that's important. Something else that I'm really interested in that you may have more knowledge about is unusual water chemistry. So I funded a couple years ago, actually it was at the Bulletproof, the biohacking conference. Now it's going to its 7th year. we had Gerald Pollack come in, and we actually got donations, and then I paid the rest of it for research on exclusion zone water. And this is for healthy mitochondria, for healthy cells. You need to be able to modify water. The first thing mitochondria do is they change bulk water into exclusion zone water, which allows ATP to form. And it looks like light has an effect on that. And the research that Bulletproof funded was around, what do droplets of fat suspended in water do? It turns out the type of fat really makes a difference. Newsflash, saturated fat works better. Anyway, what do we know about red light, near infrared light, and the formation of water on cell membranes?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic, and I think probably over the next few years we'll really begin to learn a lot more. In fact, there's a researcher, and his name is completely escaping me, that recently published a paper, literally within the past, 3 or 4 months, something like that, that suggests, you know, the core mechanism of action when it comes to red and near infrared light therapy may not necessarily be stimulating cytochrome C oxidase. I don't know. I don't know if there's like general consensus around that. But instead, actually changing the viscosity of metabolic water, the water inside your mitochondria, which is different than kind of, you know, water as we think. And by changing the viscosity, right, making it thinner, so to speak, you're actually able to electrons are actually able to pass, you know, across the electron transport chain a lot faster, a lot easier. And so, in essence, your mitochondria are becoming like well-oiled machines, mm-hmm. Simply by changing the viscosity of water. And so he suggested in this paper, and I, in my opinion, called out some really interesting, compelling findings. But at the end of the day, whether you're stimulating cytochrome C oxidase, which is kind of like a traffic control cop, right, for, mm-hmm. you know, metabolic, you know,
for
function.
For electrons in your cells.
Yeah. Or you're changing, you know, the metabolic water in and of itself, at the end of the day, you're basically allowing your mitochondria, or giving your mitochondria the ability to function more efficiently, which leads to so many other, it's so foundational, right? And leads to so many other, you know, health benefits that we discussed.
It's funny. It reminds me of a woman named Candace Pert, who discovered the opiate receptor going back a while. And I'm sad I didn't get to interview her before she passed, but she, in her autobiography, she sort of writes about her whole story. And she's trying to, as her career progressed, she became way more open to meditation and things like that versus everything's mechanistic. Mm-hmm. And she describes meeting with a group of shamans and describing opiate receptors. And they looked at each other, said something in Spanish or whatever. And the translators, you know, she's, what did they say? And they said, they're talking to each other saying, this lady thinks that all those opiate receptors actually exist. Because from their perspective, like, well, of course it works, but whether you want to tell yourself a story that it's because of these receptors or some other story, like, it doesn't matter because it works. So, you know, we know in this case, an opiate-based plant medicine does these specific things. You put it in the system, it comes out. It's a black box. You tell yourself a story about the black box in the middle of the system, you don't really know. So I'm going to say that our story is much more likely to be true, but it's still a black box because we can't watch one electron move through the system yet. And when we can, then it's no longer a black box. Till then, if you can reliably say, I'm going to do these things and these things come out and we think it's why, I'm just okay with that because I don't want to wait 180 years to figure out, oh, now we know for sure what's in the black box, so it's okay to use it. And that's the difference between, you know, biohacking and this sort of rigid, slow moving, well, yeah, we know that might save your life, but we're not really sure, so you can't use it. And you're like, screw you, like, that's not okay. So that's why you got to do the things that are likely to be beneficial, because we know what happens if you do the standard American diet. You pretty much spend the last 20 years of your life suffering, and then you die poor. It's like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Right. No, I think that's a super interesting topic. I mean, I personally tend to lean towards more, I tend to be more mechanistic in general, right? Like, why is something working, right? I want to understand it. And I'm always amazed at people that just, like the shamans, as you pointed out, that just, of course it works. Like, we know it works. Why do you need to understand what's inside the black box? You know what I mean?
And it's good to be curious about the black box. And I'm the biggest fan of cracking that thing open. But in the meantime, I'll use it.
Right.
Is what I'm saying here. Like, around the gut microbiome.
Yeah. Especially when there's hardly any downside. I mean, it's hard to find any downside to using something, but intuitively it kind of makes sense. But I think that is one more point that kind of serves as this example, that if we can help induce healthy mitochondrial function, regardless of how it works or what's inside the black box, it's apparent that that really drives a lot of like really positive health benefits across the board.
So end of the day, whether the red light is affecting cytochrome C oxidase or it's a nitric oxide thing, so there's more oxygen availability, or it's changing the viscosity of water, it might be one of the three, it might be all three, and one of them may have a bigger effect. I'm curious, but in the meantime, I'll use it while we figure it out.
Right.
I feel so good about that. I want to ask you some rapid fire questions as we're coming up on the end of the show, stuff that I know that I've seen on social media and people are saying, Dave, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? I want to know what you think about this. So red versus near infrared light. Pros, cons.
I'll try to be rapid fire here. Yeah. So I don't know if there's like a lot of pros or cons, or really cons to either one of them per se. They work very similarly. They have the kind of generally speaking the same mechanisms of action. But the unique thing about near infrared light is it does penetrate deeper within our body. So whereas the red light is primarily absorbed by the dermis and epidermis in our skin, near infrared light has the unique ability to penetrate deeper, even into bone, which we talked about earlier, which is why those types of wavelengths are studied when it comes to bone formation or bone health. So that's the primary difference between the two.
What about the best ways to use photobiomodulation or light therapy?
I don't want to sound vague. It kind of depends on what you're using it for. But if you're just looking to like proactively have better health, I think full body or any sort of device that will allow you to treat a large area of your body is ideal. And personally speaking, like my routine is, as I mentioned earlier, is I stand in front of a full body Juve device on the Vibe plate for 7 or 8 minutes on the front side of my body, turn around, do the same thing on the back side of my body, and at the same time I'm doing breath work and listening to a podcast. So the more, in my opinion, the more therapies you can kind of stack, in that routine is you'll get more bang for your buck.
I mean, you've been to my house in Victoria at Bulletproof Labs Alpha, and yeah, there's a Bulletproof Vibe standing there, and mm-hmm. I've got the Juve light on one side, I've got a sunlight panel on the other side because it's Canada and it's dark in winter. Mm-hmm. And bottom line is, well, hold on, you're getting your exercise because you're vibrating and you're getting your light therapy. So the ROI on that time is pretty strong. And if you didn't have the lights and you did it, you'd still have a good return. You just got more return in the same minutes of beneficial things. And sometimes that's all the movement I'm really going to get in a day. And like, that's all right.
Yep. Okay. Yep. One other sub question that often comes up on that note is morning, evening, when's the best time to use this?
And yeah.
I'd say generally speaking, whenever you can fit it into your schedule is probably ideal. And if you're using, a high quality device, all you really need is about 10 minutes. Most people have that amount of time. But if you really want to kind of get into like biohacking and really try to optimize the type of therapy, I think about the timing it with the morning sunrise and sunset, really, and trying to align this type of therapy with your natural circadian biology. So whether you use it in the morning or the evening, those are probably the ideal times.
Yeah, sunset and sunrise is when we have the most red. But I don't know if you have any experience on shining the Juve, on the face right before bed. Have you seen any effect on that?
Anecdotally, Dr. Michael Hamlin, who's another highly regarded, photomedicine researcher, that's one of his best biohacks for sleeping is not using red light, but actually near infrared light on his forehead at night.
Oh, near infrared, I could see that.
Yeah, because it's invisible to the naked eye. Yeah.
And you'd get the blood flow in the brain for sleep. I could totally buy that.
You got it. Okay. Yeah.
How about this light therapy photobiomodulation versus infrared saunas? A lot of people seem to confuse the two. What are the differences?
I think the short answer is they're both good, but they're different therapies. And the best analogy is kind of like comparing a marathon to a kettlebell workout. Both can be good. You're just going to get a different physiological response that's happening. And to go a little bit deeper on that, most of our discussion has been centered around red and near infrared light. The reality is that the infrared spectrum, near, mid, and far, is actually really broad, ranges anywhere from, around 800 nanometers to 20,000 nanometers. So it's actually really, really quite broad. And mid and far infrared wavelengths actually induce heat. And so that's why most infrared saunas are going to primarily use mid and far infrared because they're great at generating heat. And so that can be good, generating heat stress. I mean, there's plenty of data that showcases that there's a number of health benefits that come from sauna-based therapy. But photobiomodulation using red and near infrared light, it's just it's different. You get a different, you know, biological response. So both are good, but just different.
I would totally agree with that. What about eye protection? I full disclosure, I don't put anything over my eyes because I feel like my eyes would like to have cytochrome C, and like I don't know that there's harm from it. If I was using high powered infrared lasers or something, but in terms of LEDs, I don't worry. But what's the best practice there?
Yeah, and I think it kind of depends on what device you're using. So a legit high quality device is gonna have. There, at some point, there's going to be IEC testing done on photobiological safety testing, which is, you know, is this PBM device safe to use with your eyes? So like our devices specifically, they've gone through those tests and, you know, check the box. It's actually safe to use without eyewear. But the deeper question is it good for your eyes? And our position is yes, it is. It may be bright for people that are new to the therapy, and you can certainly wear, some true dark glasses or some sort of like, you know, eyewear, but
the true dark glasses wouldn't even work for that, I guess, because they're going to allow all of the red light through, because that's what they're meant to do. So don't even worry about that. I mean, they have the little ones for like sun tanning, those dumb little caps.
Yeah.
And plus you don't want wrinkles around your eyes. That like so the smaller the coverage of your eyes. So I've not ever felt the need to use this. I do close my eyes when I'm in front of it, mm-hmm. which seems like a good idea. But
I do that as well.
Yeah.
But we've got a great article on our site that like goes mm-hmm. deep on the science of for the health benefits with respect to your eyes when it comes to red and near infrared light therapy. And there's plenty of data that suggests these wavelengths of light are very healthy for your eyes, not just for proactive health when it comes to like maybe increasing vision, but also reducing, you know, diseases like macular degeneration. So that's our general stance, is actually, you know, if you don't mind the brightness of the light, like, Why wear eyewear?
What about LED flicker?
This is an interesting topic. And I think generally speaking, there's probably a fair amount of misinformation around like LED flicker and what it means and what it does in terms of, you know, the health consequences. And I think most of the data that you see, the science that you see that's with respect to the dangers of LED flicker is really centered around different wavelengths of light that are delivered from, you know, inefficient LEDs, the same ones that you can find in like a Lowe's or a Home Depot that deliver bright light that noticeably flickers. That's very different than something like a light therapy device that is either intentionally or not intentionally fluctuating the wavelengths. And what I mean by that is there's a fair amount of research now that suggests when it comes to light therapy or PBM that flicker or fluctuation of those wavelengths can actually be very beneficial and actually lead to even better results. And so I think the big kind of moral of the story is that if you're intentionally trying to deliver fluctuation or flicker with wavelengths of light for therapeutic reasons, that can be good. If it's unintentional, unmitigated, you know, LED flicker, that may not be so good.
We definitely know there's pretty compelling research around 40 hertz flickering, where they're seeing a reduction in amyloid plaques for Alzheimer's just from any color of light flickering 40 times a second. That's really interesting. But I'm very skeptical about the ongoing and untested safety of spending all day every day in an environment where the lights above your head are turning on and off 120 times a second. Like it's not a good thing as far as I can tell.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's that chronic overexposure to inefficient LED. Well, I say inefficient because generally speaking, most LEDs are pretty efficient, but like, you know, kind of subpar quality, non-medical grade LEDs, and overexposure to those types of LEDs that are delivering, you know, artificial kind of white light all day. Yeah, probably not a great idea. In fact, there's a story behind that. Dr. John Ott, who's kind of considered one of the
original light hacker guys.
Yeah, totally. In fact, his book was one of the first ones I read when I first started getting into this. But it's his work in time lapse photography that kind of got him into light. And he studied through time lapse photography kids that were exposed to this type of lighting in schools. And through that early work, and this is when time lapse photography was brand new, he showcased like visible like fatigue like symptoms with these, you know, these kids that were in a classroom all day with that type of lighting. So I think but that's very different than like this kind of this unsupported fear of like,
all LEDs are bad and they flicker all the time. Well, that's not really the case. You know what I mean? You have to kind of understand what you're, you know, what you're doing, and kind of that chronic exposure to like bright white LEDs. Yeah, probably not great, but that doesn't mean that all LEDs are bad per se.
I would go so far as to say that given the current state of LED technology, indoor illumination with LEDs is a really bad idea if you want to live a long time. That said, LEDs can be used therapeutically in a beneficial way,
mm-hmm.
right? And magically, I don't know anyone who's sensitive to red light. It seems like it's really good for you, right? So you can take people who just tweak with most light spectrums, and you can put red glasses on them, or you put them in a room with a Juve and no other lights on, like, I feel good. So I look at red as sort of the safe color for light, and there's something to be said there.
And maybe just to kind of wrap that up, the parallel example is, it would be, you know, someone learning a little bit more about like how fats can be used for health. And
you know,
they may walk into that conversation thing, well, all fats are bad. Well, no, not really. If you actually learn about, you know, the different kinds of fats, and no, actually some fats are really beneficial. And and so that's kind of the same concept when it comes to light, is like understand.
Really good explanation.
Yeah. Understand what colors you're dealing with and your exposure, you know, and mm-hmm. whether you're overexposed to those types of colors. And yeah, so there's more to the story. And I think just to kind of having that kind of general broad understanding is helpful to kind of answer the notorious flicker question.
Yeah, it's a tough one, because not all LEDs are bad, but having an LED above your desk at your office probably is. And like, how do you explain that nuance in a single sentence?
Exactly, yeah.
All right, I've got one final question for you that might not be a rapid fire question. And this has to do with Superhuman, my new anti-aging book. And I've been asking people over the last 100 or so episodes, how long are you going to live? What's your number?
I don't know if I've ever actually been asked that question.
Probably not.
I'm going to say, well, this is going to pale in comparison to your answer, but I would say I'm going to stick with 100.
Only 100?
Only 100.
Even with all of your light therapy exposure.
Maybe I'm selling myself short, but I'll stick with, I'm into the three digits.
Okay. How old are you now?
I'm 38.
38. Okay. So you think over the next 62 years of research and development that we're only going to be able to get you to 100.
Maybe I'm selling myself.
Go back 62 years. What was the world like 62 years ago?
A lot different.
World War II.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually
look at the
interesting
cars.
Thing to think about. Yeah.
Look at what we could do medically. Look at antibiotics. We're just coming out.
Well, what's your number, Dave?
180.
180. Okay.
So I'm like, and you go back 100 years. That's World War I. We're fighting it with horses.
Well, that's that many more Juve devices you can buy period of time. So
I'm counting on my Juve underwear by then, man.
Exactly.
No, but seriously, like you look at these timescales, I think we're all selling ourselves short right now because so much cool stuff, including stuff you're working on. It's changing the world.
That's actually really interesting. I never thought about it in that light, that 60-some years ago, World War II. Yeah. And so the changes that you know likely will happen with that amount of time. Yeah, maybe I should increase that number a bit.
They didn't have machine learning. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have the ability that you and I have to look at PubMed. Like I'm 46, so I'm just a little bit older than you, but did you ever have to use a microfiche?
No,
do
I don't
you know
think
what
so.
That is?
No.
Ah, there we go. World War II. Now, you see why 180 isn't crazy.
Are you kidding me? 140.
There we go.
We'll split.
All right. Yeah. Upgraded. All right. There we go. Scott, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I totally appreciate it. You're doing really good work with Juve. I love that you're doing clinical trials. Super cool stuff. Your website, JOOVV.com.
You got it. Yeah. Two O's, two V's. It's short for rejuvenate. So check us out. We've got a whole host of educational articles there too, if you want to get into the science.
Well, I appreciate it. Keep on pushing on that red light, the near infrared light, and I will keep using it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Dave. Really appreciate it.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.